From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 883, Microsoft Sentinel with guest Sarah Young. Recorded Thursday, April 6th, 2023. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts, LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Hi, this is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Today, my guest is Sarah Young, who's a senior cloud security advocate working at Microsoft. She's lived all over the place, but currently calls Melbourne home. And Sarah's been working in cybersecurity since before it was cool, holds numerous industry qualifications, and has co-authored a few Microsoft Press technical books. And back in 2019, Sarah won the Security Champion Award at the Australian Women's in Security Awards. Congratulations on that one, Sarah. But that was that's pre-pandemic. That's a different life.
It is. I mean, in fact, it is pre-pandemic, and it was a very different life. You know what? I was thinking I needed a nice outfit a couple of weeks ago, and it's still in storage from pre-pandemic, exact outfit I wore there. So I'm looking forward to getting all that stuff back and unpacking it soon. So, but yes, pre-pandemic, I can't believe it's like
4 years ago. Yeah.
4 years ago, 3-4 years ago. And it doesn't seem like that long.
No.
But it was.
There was that, like, it was March 455th, right? Where we just sort of froze March 2020 for a while.
Yeah.
But the world's coming back together again. We saw each other in Melbourne. I've been sort of back into the travel swing late last year, this year. So it's getting a little more normal. We've been recording a few shows on the road, you know, the fun stuff.
That's cool. Yeah, I actually recently did a long haul flight from Australia to Europe, and I used to do those pre-pandemic.
Oh man.
Not all the time, but sort of fairly frequently, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is a really long way. I'd forgotten how far this is. I'm definitely out of practice with some of my long haul travel.
Yeah, especially like out of Australia, like up to Europe is what, 30 hours? It's crazy.
It depends on if you get a good connection. Can sort of do it depending on which city you go to. If you only do two hops, so say like Melbourne to London or Melbourne to another big European capital city, you can usually do it in under 25, which is good.
Okay, good for you. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, everywhere's long haul from Australia, that's apart true. From New Zealand.
Nah, I've got a good deal in Vancouver. I can get to Australia in 15 hours and I can get to Europe in 10. So it's a nice balancing act.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Australia, I love Australia, but in terms of being too far away from a lot of places, Australia is a pain for that. Yeah, pretty much everything is long haul aside from New Zealand. So you just sort of get used to it or just don't travel, whichever one it is.
Or don't travel. Whatever you prefer. So, I mean, you work as a cloud security advocate. So Microsoft Sentinels must be front and center for you. Is that what you talk about? Do customers understand its purpose?
Yeah. Well, Sentinel. So before I was a cloud security advocate, mm-hmm. I worked in the Sentinel customer experience engineering or CXE team for the last 2.5 years. So I've been doing a lot of Sentinel. In fact, when I came to advocacy, it meant I could do some other things as well, not just Sentinel, but Sentinel it's still a really cool thing. It's relatively new in all the Microsoft security product suites that we have, Defender for blah.
Right.
So it's still something I talk about a lot because people have a lot of questions and it's a tool that most people should be using. So yeah, we still talk about it a lot.
Is it homegrown? It wasn't a purchased product that's evolved?
No, it wasn't purchased. I've been asked that many times before because, sometimes we do purchase companies and incorporate it.
Sure. I see, Arc came from a purchased product that then evolved several different names before it became Arc.
Yeah, no, Sentinel was built from the ground up, which is cool. And it is used internally within Microsoft. We migrated before, because not super secret, we used to use ArcSight and some other tools. And now our security monitoring is 100% Sentinel as well. So it's something that we use internally too. So it's been built on a lot of real life stuff.
That then begs the question, was it first an internal product that you then productized? Or did it mature to a level where they said, we should move the company to this?
We waited till it was mature enough for us too, because there was testing done, and some of the machine learning models that it has were certainly tested internally and with some customers and in some other scenarios as the product developed. But just like everybody else, because I've been working with Sentinel literally since it was announced, which was it was announced publicly at RSA 2019. Okay. So yes, RSA 2019. So and it was, it for anybody who's listening who may have played around with it back in the day, I mean, it was very basic then, because it was in preview, and like, it was good to mess around with, but it probably wasn't to the point that you would want to use it in production. And so no, it was the same. We also we had like pockets of it running for testing, but we also had to do a staggered migration, because I mean, we got a lot of security operations out there too. So, and actually most of the customers I've ever worked with, I've only worked with one customer who did a big bang, who chopped their old seam and went onto Sentinel in one big go.
Yeah. That doesn't even sound like a good idea. It seems smart.
I wouldn't say it's necessarily a bad idea, but there's a lot of risk associated with it. For that customer, I mean, I can't sort of say who they were, but they had they had good reasons. It was all contractual stuff that they had, like a hard, we've got to stop using it here date. But that was quite unusual. What we generally see is people, they'll start using Sentinel probably, you know, for a pocket of their infrastructure, usually cloud or something like that.
Obviously.
And then they'll, which makes sense, right? And then they might like, and then the usually they've got like probably an on-prem older seam running and monitoring, you know, their on-prem and other things, and then they start to move it across. And often if you're doing, well, I know, cheesy digital transformation and putting everything in the cloud, as you move things across to the cloud, you just repoint the monitoring to the cloud seam. I mean, that makes sense.
Right.
But there's always, we know that not everyone's got rid of on-prem. I mean, nobody's got rid of all their on-prem. No, and so there comes a tipping point.
No such thing.
Yeah, there's no such thing. So unless you were born in cloud.
Yeah.
God, I'm throwing out all the buzzwords today.
Look at you.
So, unless you were born in cloud. But then we usually find that there's a tipping point where it doesn't make sense to keep the old seam anymore. And I realize I say seam rather than sim for North American people, but
I like seam. I think it's right. I mean, security, seam, investigation, response, detection.
Yeah. And seam, it's got an E in it. So because in North America, people say sim, but I'm like, that should be S-I-M, whereas seam is S-E-I-M. But, you know, it much of a muchness.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we see people generally sort of stagger. And sometimes people never get rid of their on-prem seam as well. They choose to keep both of them. And you can hook them up. You can... We would prefer, of course, that you have Sentinel as like your boss or your master, whatever you want to call it. But you can take the alerts, the consolidated alerts out of any seam and sort of push them into Sentinel. Because then what you really want is to be able to do the correlation across absolutely everything. And so you have to put everything in one place to do that.
Yeah.
But there are ways of doing it that save money and mean that if you've spent, because what we find is people have often spent a lot of money and time on their older seam, because on-prem seams, you used to have to build them. You used to have to spend so long tuning them that people have given a lot of heart and soul and they don't just want to give it up.
Yeah, they're a little emotional about it.
I can understand that, to be honest with you.
But this gets down to that whole event filtering problem, right? That inevitably, when you snap any one of these monitoring systems in place, you get blasted with a fire hose of data.
So, and there's a couple of problems. I mean, nowadays, modern systems, as you say, there's just a fire hose of signals and stuff that you need to root through. But also, on on-prem SIEMs, it used to be you would pay for a SIEM, you would have a license, and you would have licensing for like however many virtual machines it was running on and whatever capacity it had. So in order to get your money's worth from the SIEM, you would throw every single log you possibly could at it because that's how you got your money's worth. Whereas in a cloud-based SIEM, and not just Sentinel, generally you pay for however much you ingest. So that strategy of throwing every single log...
Oh, interesting.
That strategy of throwing every single log you possibly can does not translate well into cloud because you'll end up paying an insane amount. So there's two problems. In your older on-prem scenario, you need to really be looking at rationalizing the logs. I've actually got a sticker and it was a phrase that I borrowed from Mark Symas, so I can't claim credit, but collection is not detection.
Right.
And what a lot of folks used to do, and it also ticked a box for some regulatory things, was they just say, oh, we put our logs in a SIEM, but they wouldn't necessarily do anything with them. But in the old school way of pricing, it didn't really matter if you didn't do anything with them. Whereas when we look at cloud-based SIEMs, when you've got that ingestion-based charging and your consumption charging, actually you need to have a look and say, hey, am I doing anything with this log? Does it have security value? And if it doesn't, why am I putting it in my SIEM?
Yeah. Why am I making the situation worse? And now in this case, actually making it more expensive.
Yeah. Making it more expensive. So you've got that. And definitely, I've definitely seen over the years doing Sentinel migrations, you know, some customers do get a bit of a bill shock because, you know, if you just repoint everything that you logged before, suddenly they're like, whoa, why is this costing so much money? But that rationalization piece is difficult as well, because if you've been throwing all these logs at your SIEM for 10 years, probably people don't remember why they were put there and that process to go through them.
Well, and so many people, when they migrate to the cloud, and I literally did the show last week, I called the show Azure Sticker Shock. You're just migrating the workloads you were running on-prem into the cloud as is, and then you're stunned that they're inefficient. Because you provision for peak, so you're making way larger VMs than you need. You've turned on all sorts of features, like just exactly that mindset of just stick every log into the SIEM, whether I use it or not, so that I have a clearinghouse for it all. The most expensive way to do it.
Exactly. So yeah, it's, you know what, it's pretty much exactly the same, is that you have to do the rationalization piece, and just lifting and shifting your on-prem into cloud is more expensive without that rationalization piece. The good thing is, and then you've got obviously all your cloud services, they have loads and loads and loads of logs and signals as well too. So you have to sort through those. The nice thing is with that side of things is there's, in Sentinel, we have a load of, they're always Microsoft-based ones, as you would expect. There's Microsoft logs that we let you ingest for free. So Azure Activity, some of the Microsoft Security, the Defender alerts, not the raw logs, but the consolidated alerts. Sentinel lets you ingest those for free. We have like a page that shows you all the free things.
Right.
So don't take away from this that everything in Microsoft land is free to ingest, because that's not true. But there's certainly some useful things that are. So that's a good way to start.
And are those things on the list because they're very valuable data that you should always ingest, so we don't want to charge you for them, or are they inexpensive?
It's actually probably a little bit of both. I mean, Azure Activity, Azure Activity, that can be quite noisy, but the Defender alerts. So the way that the Defender alerts there, so, you know, Defender for blah, will have already done some analysis, and then it creates its own alert. So rather than dumping a load of raw logs into the SIEM, you just take a consolidated alert. So we'd call that like high fidelity, because it's already had a load of analysis done over it. And we say for like modern SIEM, in modern hybrid environments, what you should do is get your raw logs. And where you can, if you have a tool that's appropriate, and this is whether it's a Microsoft tool or whether it's something else, you feed those logs into your specialized security tooling. So I'll talk Microsoft, but again, you can find and replace the Microsoft name with something else. So, you know, if you take like Defender for Endpoint, so you take all of those, Defender for Endpoint is looking at loads of raw logs on your endpoints, right? Whatever you've got it installed on. It will have a look at all those raw logs and it will create alerts, you know, saying, oh, this looks dodgy, this looks like malware, whatever it is. And rather than sending all those raw logs straight into Sentinel, you would take that consolidated alert where Defender has already had a look at all the logs and send that to Sentinel. So it massively reduces the amount of logs that you are ingesting that you pay for, but also it's already had some analysis done across it. So it's actually more likely to be a better signal to do some more stuff in Seamland with. And so our reference architecture for security operations says, you know, where possible, if you've got a raw log, use a specialized product to do some analysis,
right,
and then put that analysis in the seam rather than just dumping loads and loads of raw logs in. Now, you won't be able to do that for everything. Like, you will have raw logs in your seam.
Right.
Like, that's impossible to get rid of, realistically. But the less you can have, obviously, the less it costs you.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it makes your, writing rules at the seam level, the correlation rules to detect things, way, way more straightforward. Because rather than saying,
sure,
if you see this, and this, create an alert, it might be just, if you see this alert, consolidated alert from Defender for Endpoint, and you see this from Defender for Identity, create an incident. Like, way, way, way more straightforward to manage as well.
Right. And I mean, and you're getting to the point, which it, that the SIEM's job is to coordinate all this information to show the shape of an attack.
Yes. Because as we said, like Defenders, I actually have a sticker with this somewhere. I give it out at conferences. It says, "That's out of scope," said no attacker ever. Because attackers, and I'll have to give you one next time I see you in person.
Next time, yes.
But it's one of my favorite stickers that resonates with everybody, because mm-hmm. what you do, you can't, the whole point of a SIEM is to bring all your security signals together from all the parts of your environment and give you that visibility across everything. Because attackers don't just attack your identity.
No.
They don't just attack your endpoints. Attackers are looking to traverse your environment to go and find something of value. So
right.
whether it's they're stealing PII, whether they want to ransomware your files to try and make you pay up, whatever it is, they won't just stop anywhere. They will keep going. So it might. So in order to see the shape of an attack, you need to consolidate all these things that were traditionally siloed to see what they're doing and where they're going.
Right.
And so that's why a SIEM is so important. I get asked a lot, why do I need Sentinel? And again, I can talk about this more generally.
Mm-hmm.
Sentinel, or replace with any SIEM that you currently use, why do I need a SIEM over just like endpoint protection?
Right.
And that's because endpoint protection is only looking at your endpoint.
Yes.
And that might be your initial breach into the environment, sure, and your endpoint protection might pick up on it, but then they're gonna go elsewhere. That's you know, they don't just pop a box and then disappear.
Yeah.
They're trying to look for things. So that's why a SIEM is as a capability is so important, that you have that something looking over everything,
right,
and sucking up all the signals and what's going on. So you can start to map the path of what someone potentially is doing, because it's the same with in incident response, because mm-hmm. I come from help desk, as all good IT people do. I started off in help desk.
Not going to argue with that.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, with even normal incident response, you know, the first thing you want to do is understand the scope of the problem,
sure,
and try and contain it. And that's exactly the same with security incident response. It's what's the scope of the breach and how do we contain it?
Mm-hmm.
And the only way, well, you can do it without a SIEM, but it's really painful.
Your SIEM's then going to be an Excel spreadsheet where you're putting notes from all the different things in. Like, you're going to do it one way or the other. It's just, are you doing it by hand or is the tool helping you?
Yeah. And the thing is, obviously, you know, time is of the essence.
Yeah.
The quicker you can understand the scope, the quicker you can respond and isolate it. And we know, I mean, there are high profile breaches all the time. Mm-hmm.
And they go on for weeks and weeks. I did the show just a little while ago where we're talking to Paula about the average time is 200 days.
Yeah.
So, you know, that you had time and you found it in the logs after it was over that you could have detected them. And this is what these tools are for.
Yeah. And you know, we always say now in security, assume breach.
Yeah.
Like, assume, you must assume you have been breached.
Mm-hmm.
You may not realize you have been breached, but you will have been breached. And there's that side of things, but there's also assume you are going to be breached.
Yes.
Because no security is 100%.
No.
And so we always, of course, if we can avoid a breach, that's great.
Yeah.
Of course we want to. But the reality is that, you know, nothing is 100%. And so you need to assume that if we get breached, what controls do we have to limit the damage, limit the impact, how can we pick up on it quickly? And it's still what amazes me when I go out and do my job now is I talk to security communities, but also just more general IT communities. And I also talk to the big wide world as well. And because cybersecurity is one of those really odd bits of IT that is literally relevant to everybody in some way, shape, or form.
Everybody, because everybody touches technology.
Yeah, everyone uses technology. And one of the things that still sort of blows my mind is that there is still a prevailing, like, I'd say sort of innocence or naivety that people are like, oh yeah, I know that happens, but why would that happen to me? Why right. would someone want to attack me? And why would they want to attack my business?
Right.
I'm not a big global company. Why would they be interested in me? Now, that is wrong.
Yeah.
Because the fact is, now there are different types of, you know, malicious actors out there. You know, you have state-sponsored actors, you have criminal people, but, you know, you have the script kiddies, you have all kinds of people. But by and large, the majority of bad folks out there, the good proportion are trying to make money.
Yep.
And everybody has money. So, and often smaller businesses tend to have not as many security controls because they don't have as many people.
Right.
They're actually easier to go after. So, a lot of people say, oh yeah, but it doesn't matter about me. No, it does.
It absolutely does.
It really does. And actually we've seen, I saw a talk last summer at Hacker Summer Camp about, some even state-sponsored actors going to target small businesses,
right.
but small businesses that are key in the overall supply chain.
In that supply chain, yeah.
Yeah, they were given an example in Ukraine of a business that created the only Ukrainian language accounting software, because the Ukrainian language obviously is only spoken in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just this one Ukrainian language accounting software available. And it's not a massive business, of course, because it doesn't sort of scale outside Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, and so a lot of businesses are dependent on it, though, for their accounting. And it was attacked by allegedly,
state actors,
a state actor. It came under cyber attack, and it basically was taken out of operation for quite a long time. But that really disrupted a lot of Ukrainian businesses because they couldn't do their accounting. And so
Brilliant.
Actually
yeah.
what we see is there's definitely just in terms of your everyday criminals wanting
sure.
money,
they'll hit the easier marks. Not everybody's targeting the biggest players.
No, they're really not. And yeah. I think that's something that still a lot of people don't realize.
No, it's kind of wishful thinking to just say, oh, they won't target me. That's true of anybody.
They won't. Yeah, you've got money. And
yeah.
also they know that the chances are you can't afford, if you are breached and you're a small business, you probably can't afford to pay specialist security consultancies,
right.
To come in and, you know, potentially, you know, fix everything for you. Because,
sure.
you know, it's very specialized and those people cost a lot of money.
They're very expensive.
It's probably cheaper to pay the ransom. And
yeah. And that was their goal all along.
Yeah. And that was their goal all along. So it's really never, ever say why would they go for me? Because I can tell you.
Absolutely. They will.
They will go for you because they will go for anyone who's easy.
Yeah.
There's always a misconception that people who are hacking are like, you know, sat and doing some really complex hack.
No. If they wanted to work hard, they wouldn't be bad guys.
Yeah, exactly. And they're not. Like, if you've just like not done patching or
yeah.
you've not got MFA and they can buy your reused passwords online, they're going to do that
yeah.
overspend hours and hours and hours
so
trying to
simpler.
Do something complex.
I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. Get ready to make a difference. Join the cause of the Humanitarian Toolbox and help make a positive impact on disaster relief and response. HDBox creates open source software like the 2 Weeks Ready Project, which empowers individuals, families, and communities to prepare for emergencies using their smartphones. With your help, HDBox can continue to build and operate these essential disaster response and preparedness tools. By visiting hdbox.org, you can learn more about their mission and make a tax-deductible donation to support their life-saving work. Every contribution helps create software that can save lives and provide assistance when it matters most. Join the cause today and help make a difference. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's Sarah Young. We're talking a little bit about Azure Sentinel and just this, you know, recognition that security is important to all of us. You have money and other people want it. And if they can run a script to exploit your system, they will.
Oh, yeah. It's honestly, I get this into every single talk I do. Microsoft publish something called the Digital Defense Report every mm-hmm. year. Usually comes out in about November. And it's really interesting. It's not Microsoft specific. It's free. So if you go to, if you just Google Microsoft Defense Report, Digital Defense Report, you'll find it.
And I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah. And oh, yeah. Pop it in the show notes. Yeah. So it's super interesting because our research, because we have loads of security research teams, and it shows that, and we put this in like every single year, that 95% of security breaches are would be prevented or at least stalled or wouldn't have happened the way they did with good security hygiene. So good security hygiene is not super sexy or mm-hmm. exciting, but it's things like patching things in a timely manner. Mm-hmm. Having MFA turned on, things like that, which are not, we've been talking about them for ages, but the fact is people don't do them. They yeah. still don't do them. And attackers know this, and that is what they will exploit like 95% of the time. Sure. So, and we put it in the Digital Defense Report.
They'll take the easiest path, right? Whatever's the easiest way to get in.
Oh, 100%.
Buying your passwords is easy because you didn't put in MFA. And
yeah, exactly.
An unpatched server with a known exploit that they could get the script from off of the dark web and just run it and it works.
Yeah.
And they're not, you know, and this is sort of recognition of they're not targeting you. Mm-mm. They're targeting any machine that wasn't patched.
Yeah, exactly. And things like, you know, devs accidentally uploading keys in yep. their GitHub repo and stuff. It's usually a mistake, right? But it's an easy mistake to make. And
GitHub's getting better at telling you, hey, this looks an awful lot like a key. Did you really mean to upload it?
This looks like a key. Do you think it should be there? But, you know, we know now that because attackers know about that, some of them are like constantly scanning GitHub yeah. repos, just constantly. Like, we reckon that the time that someone will pick up a key now, whether they end up doing something bad with it, you know, who knows? But the time for people picking up keys is like minute.
Yeah.
Minute.
Makes sense.
People are always the weakest link in the chain.
Sure.
Always. But attackers just look for the common things that people don't do yeah. or the things that it's difficult to do well or it's an easy mistake to make. And they exploit those things rather than people really worry about. They talk about 0 days. They're like, oh, this 0 day exploit. Oh, it's super yeah. scary. Oh, you know, this is the thing that's going to, you know, ruin us. But in fact, they don't come around that often.
No.
And they take a lot of effort to develop those kind of things and use.
To use compared to a script for an unpatched server.
Yeah.
Which is freely downloadable, easy to use, and quick to get results from. Like,
yeah.
If they wanted to work hard, they wouldn't be bad guys.
Yeah. And I know security hygiene, I mean, it's not the sexiest yeah. thing to talk about. And it sounds a bit finger waggy, but I can't, honestly, if you are going to put like your effort into, if you're going to put your effort into one thing, go and tidy up your security hygiene over anything else.
Patch stuff.
Yeah.
You know, get everything. Does this show up in the SIEM too? Are you actually checking version numbers and stuff?
Yes, you can. Yes. In Microsoft land, the tool that we have that would help you with security hygiene is called Defender for Cloud, which is the product formerly known as Azure Security Center.
Right.
So, and what that does is it will look at, and it goes across all clouds now. You can plug it into your AWS and your GCP and your on-prem, and it will show you it'll say like, hey, have you patched this? It will actually, against good practices, it measures against CIS benchmarks and things like that. And it will basically tell you where your security hygiene is not right. And the basic version of Defender for Cloud is actually free. Like, Microsoft give it out for free because we don't charge for it because we feel like it is that important.
Right.
But which is actually a change from previously. So if you haven't looked at Defender for Cloud Azure Security Center for a while, you should go and look. It's that basic security hygiene piece is completely free. But what you would take from that, and the capability more broadly is known as Cloud Security Posture Management, or CSPM. Like I said, there are other tools out there as well that do the same thing, but the Microsoft one is Defender for Cloud. Mm-hmm. And then what you can do with that is, from that CSPM capability, you can feed that into your SIEM. Some people do, some people don't.
Right.
But there are definitely probably more mature organizations that will take that security hygiene and it will go into the SIEM, and the SIEM will be running rules saying, hey, the CSPM has seen that we have an unpatched machine, and they'll actually create an incident and it will be treated as such. There are different ways of managing that side of things.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting to think about it, to call an unpatched server an incident.
Yeah.
There isn't a bad actor yet, but I guess if you presume breach, then it just means it's an undetected bad actor.
Yeah. So exactly how you deal with that might vary a little bit between companies. Certainly, I think if you're very mature and you're very on top of your security hygiene and you expect it all to be good, seeing something that is not okay probably could be an incident.
Sure.
But also, the CSPM, that posture management piece, because that is the proactive thing, you know, you're trying to fix it before it becomes an issue or before it's exploited, that could also come under a different team. It might be more your operations people or your cloud engineering team, you know, before it becomes a security operations incident. So it may go into your SIEM, it may not. Certainly, all of these tools have the capability to pump it into your SIEM. But it would probably just depend on your security operations model. But I love CSPM stuff. It's because the problem is with security hygiene, it's always been... We've known for a long time it's really important, but it is a pain to do.
Sure.
And it's difficult.
It's all preventative work, right? Like, no preventative work is sexy.
No.
Buying insurance is not sexy, right?
Like, exactly.
It's not, nothing's on fire. You're trying to stop something from going on fire in the first place.
Yeah. Do you remember the STIGs? I forgot what STIGs stand for. It was the U.S. Department of Defense. It's like a list of, gone from my mind what STIG stands for, but they are released by the U.S. government, and they are standards for configuring servers and things.
Security Technical Implementation Guide.
There we go. So I can remember pre-automated tools that I remember once when I was a consultant, I had to, we did security assessments of on-prem servers. And so we had to find the appropriate STIG guide, and I would sit and go through the registry
step by step,
looking at the settings.
Yeah.
And that is very soul destroying, let me tell you, to do that manually. It is horrible. And and I was being paid as an external consultant to do this. And I mean, we were charging the company that we were doing it for quite a lot of money. But you know, no one wants to do that. It's horrible. And so with this new tooling, which is, you know, that is automated, it's going and doing that assessment for you and telling you what's wrong. And it can fix it as well for you as well a lot of the time. Now, again, depending on your operational procedures, not everybody will want the tool to automatically fix things. It depends on the company. But I know in Defender for Cloud, you have the option for it to fix things automatically, because you want to, you know this from cloud generally, you want to automate as much as you possibly can, because we
don't have
enough people.
Yeah.
So I think with this cloud security posture management tooling, security hygiene has become a lot easier, but I don't think, and I find this really surprising, which is why I love talking about it. I just don't think the awareness piece is there yet that people I don't think there's a good awareness that everybody knows this stuff even exists yet. So, so I'm always talking the good talk about it. And I'm like, just go and look at this stuff. It makes it so much easier to do.
I always keep an eye on the Security Baselines blog, and I'll include a link to this, because it's very much like the STIGs. It's a configuration, the sort of optimal security configuration for a given Microsoft product. Like, here's the Security Baseline configuration for Microsoft Edge. Here's the one for Windows 11. Here's the one for Office 365. It's just that here's what you can lock down. Mm-hmm. And they've given you basically a list of things that you can then apply or choose you do want to apply it or don't want to apply it. But it's recognizing that most products come configured open, so they're easy to use and get to know.
Yeah.
But for us living in this zero trust world and responsible for security of all these things, that we want to lock them down more than that. So at least it gives us some tools to get there.
Yeah. And the baselines are really good too. Mm-hmm. And the nice thing is as well that in Defender for Cloud, like a lot of the good practice is in there already.
Integrated.
So it will say, and what's really cool is it's more recent. So again, if you haven't looked at Defender for Cloud recently, you should. We've actually got baselines and security recommendations that are for AWS, GCP, mm-hmm. and on-prem specifically, because of course, general security best practice is the same wherever.
Everywhere. What are the settings for that place to get to this state?
Yeah. So now we've actually got them for the other things as well. So you can actually just do it across the whole estate, you know, right. whatever you're using, which, because that's the problem as well. As I was saying, like, if you've got a multi-cloud environment and you've got some on-prem, like your attacker is not just going to look at your Azure.
No.
It's not just going to look, you know, you need to have that baseline view and good security hygiene across everywhere.
Yeah, because they are going to try whatever path they can find.
Yeah, hackers going to hack, man. Like, you know, they're going to go across whatever it is they can find that you have not configured too well.
So what's the SIEM's role or Sentinel's role when you've now acknowledged that there's attack? Like, I really appreciate this idea that it's like a series of signal lights pop up. It's like, okay, you know, somebody's banged at this machine and we're seeing an anomalous piece of software. And now it's popped up over here as an identity misuse.
Mm.
Like the fact that you get a few of these triggers, it's like, this is an event.
Yeah. So what happens is, so say something's triggered in Sentinel, mm-hmm. and we've got lots of rules running. There's loads of inbuilt rules, but you can write your own, of course, as well.
Right.
So say, you know, some rules are triggered. It might be a number of rules. It might be one rule. Sentinel's also good at like starting to group them together. Sentinel has something called the investigation graph. And this is, if you've ever seen a video on Sentinel, this is what you will have seen. So the investigation graph, because it looks very cool.
Right.
The investigation graph is, it basically plots all the entities on a map with the alerts. So it will say, you know, here's an entity, here's a couple of workstations, here's a user account, and here's the alert. And it draws lines between them, and you can do more queries. You can say, okay, here's Bob, you know, Bob has been doing some suspicious logins. Let's see what other alerts we can see that the SIEM has that are related to Bob.
Right.
And so you can start to, the idea is that traditionally how this was done is a poor, SOC analyst, a security operations analyst, they would be probably whiteboarding this somewhere,
right.
and running queries on lots of different things. So the idea is that your initial triage can go much quicker because Sentinel will sort of use its context stuff and it's got all the signals there to start drawing conclusions for you and putting all the dots together for you so you can understand the scope of what's going on. Like I said, if you've seen the videos of Sentinel, this mm-hmm. is what
this
you've
is the
seen
thing you've
because
seen.
It looks very cool because basically it just starts to show how, you know, it starts to branch out, you know, here's, Bob, if Bob has done some anomalous logins, what else? Oh, Bob's also done some anomalous logins to this machine and
over here
and over here. And
so now do we have I talked about this on an earlier show where we talked about having that ability. You don't just want to yank the network cable out of that machine. Like,
no.
They've clearly run a piece of malware through a phishing attempt. Now we want to stop them from propagating. So it's nice to have a button that is pre-configured to lock that machine down in the sense of leave it online and able to access this way with scrutiny, but can't get to like the file servers and things.
Yeah.
Is this something that lives in the SIEM? Like this is where those scripts would be?
Yes. So there's two bits to Sentinel because we sometimes forget about this. So mm-hmm. Sentinel is actually two things. It is a SIEM and it is a SOAR. So that is Security Orchestration, Automation, and Response.
Ah.
So that's the that's the response side of it. Now, Sentinel is both a seam and a SOAR. Traditionally, you would buy a seam and a SOAR separately, but right. we made it one thing. So yeah, we haven't even talked about this bit yet. Mm-hmm. So when something is triggered when an incident or an alert is triggered in Sentinel, we can configure playbooks to run automation. So right. playbooks are done through logic apps, and we can automate doing things. Now, automation takes roughly, there's like four buckets to automation. There's just the basic alerting. So, you know, if an alert is triggered, Sentinel can ping people and email people and send people a Teams message saying, hey, something bad is happening. You might want to look at it.
Seeing something weird, yeah.
But then we've also got the response side of things where it can actually do something. So say we've got a machine that looks like it's doing dodgy things, or it looks like it's got malware in,
right.
we could run automation to isolate that.
Yeah.
And so you don't even have to have a person involved.
Block that command and control piece, right? Like,
yeah, put an NSG just completely around this machine and just like kill its access to everything.
And you don't want to wait on that. You want a message from the system that said, hey, I've NSG'd this machine because of this.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And with a user account, we can block in Azure AD. We can say, oh, that account looks like it's been compromised. You know, it's been doing lots of weird things.
Yeah, suspended.
Just block it.
Yeah.
Yeah, suspend it for now. And yeah, it happens like that. And it doesn't require, and sometimes if this is a mass event, it just does all of them. It will take in the playbook you can write, you know, every single entity, user account entity, boom, 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 block them. And you don't have to have somebody go through, make a list, go into Azure AD, right. go suspend, which could take a long time. So the automation piece is really cool. There is so many different things you can do, and you can make it very contextual. Like if you see this, do this. And if you see this, do that. I mean, if it's got an API, logic apps can talk to it.
Right, of course.
So we can do all kinds of different things. And if you've got third-party tools, we can talk to them and tell them to do things. Like the possibility, it sounds so cheesy, but the possibilities are endless with what you can do with automation. I mean, we have in Sentinel, and in fact, the whole of Sentinel has loads of templates. So if you're new to doing security operations and you don't really know where to start, we've got a ton of templates you can use. Mm-hmm. I think for the automation piece, that's something that I think customers have used a lot more of, because sometimes they're just like, well, I don't know what I want to do. Like, what can I do? Because if you've never done automation before for security operations, where do you start?
Yeah, yeah. Seems hugely intimidating.
Yeah, it is scary to start with. And I still think there's also, because of course you can have false positives, you know, we can never get rid of them. People are a bit worried about the SOAR capability taking actions, because what if it's a false positive and you go, I don't know, block the CEO's account,
right.
you know, on Azure AD. People get a little bit scared.
It's like, hey, yeah, but it's like, hey, you did a security thing. It tripped the security wire. Like, generally speaking, when the credit card company calls me to say, hey, this looks like a weird transaction, just want to make sure it's you, I'm grateful.
I am too.
That somebody's paying attention, you know?
Yeah. I remember sort of back in the day, because the systems have got much better now. And and usually if I get called or my card gets blocked, I'm like, yeah, I can see why you did that, even though if it's real.
Yeah, that's fair. Now, it is real, but I understand, you know.
I can remember, though, sort of 10 years ago, probably longer, actually, when I was in the UK, my bank at the time, they had a very overzealous system that liked to block you for everything. Yeah. I mean, I lived in London and went to buy a sandwich and a coffee once and it blocked me.
Right.
And they were calling me like, did you do this transaction? Are you in London? And I'm like, yes, I live in London. Literally, my address is London. I buy coffee from here all the time. I don't understand.
Your software sucks, right? This is a normal transaction in a normal location. Like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was like, your software sucks. Why does it keep thinking this is fraudulent? But that was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
The stuff is much more intelligent now. And I think it makes sort of some fairly logical decisions. I think you're right that people are more empathetic if you've been blocked because of security. But of course, if you know, there can be knock-on effects on like the service desk and other things.
Sure.
So you do have to be a bit careful.
You have to be careful. And yeah. And one of them is amusing, and 100 of them is a problem.
Exactly. And it is a maturity piece as well. I think, you know, to start with, people just want to do sort of straightforward things like the alerting and maybe a little bit of basic remediation. And then you can get much more complex as time goes on.
Yeah, I would definitely want to initially put in, I would have blocked this given this script existed. Like that you see it falling over tripwires that makes sense. Before we wrap up, do you want to talk a little bit about the security copilot? Because that seems to play into this whole narrative, especially for folks who are just trying to find their way.
Yeah. Well, for those who have not heard, because it's super, super new, as in like last week or the week before. So Microsoft announced something called Security Copilot. So this is an AI-based tool that is basically kind of does what it says on the tin. It's going to help you do security things. You can ask it things, you can help it analyze security problems. So it's basically going to help. And it's very, very early days. So, I mean, what it ends up, I'm excited to see all the cool things it ends up doing. You know, go and look at the announcement video. Essentially, it's going to be an AI-based tool that will enable, it will just help you. So, you know, it'll be able to explain things.
It feels a lot like a natural language interface over top of something like Sentinel.
It is. We've already seen some people, there's no official Microsoft thing, but you can, if you go out there and look, if you put ChatGPT in Sentinel, it will come up with things. People have done some interesting integrations. But Security Copilot is designed to kind of go across all of the security suite and just help you, you know, it's going to help you actually give you recommendations about, you know, helping with your security posture. Exactly the thing we were talking about there was security hygiene. You can talk to Security Copilot about your hygiene and it will tell you best practices and explain things to you. So, I mean, it's very, very early days. I think it's super exciting to see where it goes. I mean, it's not even really available yet. We've just announced it.
Yeah. There's some cool videos, but it does sound like
there are some cool videos. I haven't even got to play with it yet, and I want to play with it. So,
I mean, I appreciate the idea that a lot of folks who listen to this show are not full-time security professionals, right? They're sysadmins.
No. But they need to, you end up doing security, right? So,
sure. You have to put the tinfoil hat on once a month or once a quarter, and it wouldn't be bad to have some guidance, to have a tool you work with. It's like, no, what's the next thing I should do to improve our posture?
Yeah, I think for that, it's going to be, I actually think it will be, and we'll see what happens as it comes out, but I think that it will be actually more helpful for your part-time security people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you're a full-time security person, like, I don't need to ask Copilot what SQL injection is.
Right.
I know what SQL injection is. Whereas if you are only doing security once a quarter, once a month, once a week, whatever it is, for half a day, and you get it, you know, you're looking at your security tooling and it's saying, your server is vulnerable to SQL injection, you should fix that. And you're just like, well, what does that mean? Like, what do I do? Rather than having to spend ages, you know, going through online documentation, which
searching for it, yeah,
which certainly does exist. You know, you can say to Copilot, hey, Copilot, how do I fix this? And it, you know, the idea is it's going to tell you, you know, quickly in one query, you know, go do blah, 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 and you will be fit. You know, you'll be more secure.
Further
you'll
down the path,
uplifted your security posture.
Yeah.
I think the possibilities of what we'll be able to do with it, particularly for smaller enterprises, people who don't have loads of security teams, I think that's where I think it's going to be a really useful tool. So
that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
So, yeah. Go watch the video and watch this space for when it's actually out.
Actually out there. We'll do a show on it when we can really take it out for a spin.
Oh, yeah, I know. I'm looking for, I want to take it out for a spin so badly.
For sure. And I think everybody's got to read this digital defense report because it's good stuff. And it just reminds us of, you've got, you know, Microsoft's doing a lot of work in this space of what you need to know.
Yeah, we have heaps of security teams, multiple security research teams whose job it is just to look at what is going on in the big wide world. And it's very interesting. Yeah. Like, even if you don't use Microsoft stuff, that is still relevant. It's not a Microsofty product thing. It is just, hey, this is what our research teams see out in the big wide world of the dark web and other things. Because, you know, we do see a lot of stuff out there, and it, like it or not, if you use technology, which everybody does, you know, it does touch you in some way, shape, or form. Yeah.
You've got this problem. Absolutely. Sarah, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.